Fleet, elegant, lyrical, yet sometimes hair-raising with manic energy. That's how our music critic Lloyd Schwartz describes the playing of Yugoslavian pianist Dubravka Tomsic. Tomsic was a child prodigy. She came to New York at age 12 to study at Juilliard. Tomsic went back to Yugoslavia in 1959, where she matured into one of her country's most celebrated musicians. She toured Europe, but in America she was known just by her few recordings on a budget label. This summer, she made only her second return trip to the U.S. to perform and record. Arthur Rubinstein remembered Dubravka Tomsic in his autobiography as the young girl who gave him a single rose at each of his New York City concerts during the 1950s. He eventually became her teacher and took a special interest in her career. I asked Tomsic to tell the story of Arthur Rubinstein and the roses.
We didn't have much money. Sometimes we didn't have to eat for the dinner. But when I went to a concert of Rubinstein, I always said to my mother, I mean, I won't eat, but just to give me money to buy a rose. I would always bring him a red rose because I was really, I was so overtaken by his concerts and by his music. And I think before leaving Yugoslavia, at that time, I really played only classics, and I played Bach and Mozart and Haydn, Beethoven. And somehow, at that point, my teacher gave me a record to listen to Chopin because she wanted to that I start with romantics and so on. And somehow, I don't know, it was, you know, as a child, somehow I connected it when I heard that Chopin. And it was Rubinstein on the record. I somehow connected, you know, that he opened my love for Chopin or something. I don't know. And when we were here in New York, when I started to go to his concerts, I mean, I was just overwhelmed. It was just a gesture. I don't know why. I just had to bring him a rose. I didn't introduce myself or anything. I just gave him the rose and went away. And so if he played twice that year in New York, I would give him two roses, you know.
Well, you mentioned you heard him playing Chopin. You've been recording a lot of Chopin lately yourself. Do you think of Rubinstein when you play Chopin?
Well, I worked with him, and like he said to me that time also, yes, I think about him a lot, but of course I do it my way, and that's what he wanted me to do. You know, he would never want me to copy or do things like, you know, himself.
Well, Rubinstein explains that after you brought him a rose for several years after each of his recitals, his wife found out you were a pianist and invited you over to play, and he liked your playing very much. And then I believe you lost your grant from Yugoslavia to continue your studies in the States. Is that right?
It was every year. It was really a fight. It was after the war period. And there weren't many scholarships, especially for music in our country. So they helped as much as they could, because my father by then was returned. So it was just 1 year he helped. And afterwards I had the government scholarship, which was very small, but it, at least I could study. And we had to fight for it each year. And then at certain point, yes, when it was Mr. Rubinstein who himself went to the Yugoslav embassy in Washington when he had a concert there and spoke to our ambassador. And he said he's going to work with me. And so I had one more year scholarship from Belgrade. But then it stopped because they really couldn't do more, because this was already 6 years I was in the States. So the last year, then Mr. Rubinstein arranged for me to have a scholarship, some grant from some other organization.
When did you leave the United States?
In 59.
And was that because your studies were over? Why did you decide to go back to Yugoslavia then?
Well, my studies were over. That's for one thing. My mother, she was always with me because I was so young, and she sacrificed, and my father, they were not together. So it was time to go back, I mean, for my mother and my father to be together. So,
once you returned to Yugoslavia, did you find that there were any benefits or any strings attached to the grants that had subsidized your studies in America.
Oh, you mean from my government?
Yeah.
Not at all. No strings attached. I mean, when I came back, I was invited to Brioni, where I played some concerts for different presidents or kings of different countries. And at that time, I was clearly told, you know, that there's no ties, so I can do whatever I want. I can also go out and live somewhere else. So no ties attached.
So there were never any travel restrictions placed on you?
Oh, no.
And no repertoire restrictions?
No, not at all.
Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how to put this. It's hard. There's things about music that are hard to talk about.
Yeah.
But I was wondering if sometimes playing slow passages is even more difficult than playing the fast passages because of making the spaces count. Do you know what I mean? Because you can't... There's no technical flash involved there. It's
but
pure music.
Definitely, yes, because, I mean, in quick passages, it depends also on the music and who wrote it and what period and so on. But flashy passages, yes, that's... Although also those shouldn't be just technical passages, you know, they should be also played musically and have an importance in themselves. But it is, yes, sometimes it's to play a few notes, you know, very slowly, and just a line or a melody, a very simple melody. I think to play a simple melody, it can be more difficult than any flashy passages. Because I think, as in life too, the simplicity is the most difficult thing, you know.
Do you find yourself seeking out works that have those kinds of passages in it? Do you especially?
Well, I love to work on that and on this simplicity business because if you look to anything, let's take Mozart. I mean, it looks so simple and everything. And there's so many problems, and it's so difficult. But, I mean, as when I was a child, I just took it. It was very simple, very easy to play. And it is simple, but it's so difficult, you know. And then when you capture that, really, so many problems, and if you overcome them, and then you play the music or a passage or a melody, and then... At the end, it should sound simple, you know.
Have there been turning points in your life that you feel have changed your playing?
Maybe turning point was... when I was returning back to my country after the studies, because that was a point when I had to start on my own. And that was a big point, and I'm very grateful to Mr. Rubinstein because he really told me that although it's going to be very, very hard, but I should really stay on my own feet and not go anymore from teacher to teacher, but really to work with rather discuss music with musicians, from conductors, singers, string players, and so on. But it's going to be very difficult because, you know, all of a sudden to be alone, to work alone and maybe have doubts about my way of interpreting music and so on. And it was really hard, yes, it was. But it took me a few years. I started to concertize, but there were some moments I wasn't sure. But I'm very grateful because after that, when I overcame this, I just knew what I wanted to do. And I was on my own feet and very confident and very... I knew I was on the right path.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You've recently returned to the U.S. a couple of times.
Yes.
And you played early in July at the Newport Music Festival. What's been bringing you back now? And do you plan on making the U.S. a more constant part of your tour schedule?
Well, I hope yes. Yes, I do hope. I would gladly come back again. And I think as the reception I received at Newport, as from audience, as from the music critics, I guess there is a good chance for me to come back, and I would love it, because I always feel that I did live a part of my life, a very important part of my life in the States, so I am a part of American in such a sense, if you can imagine.
Well, I thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.